Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, a Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by awesome Patreon backers like the Cerebral Cyanimus, the esteemed Erica Bond Barbagoris, and the superlative Sam G. Today we have me, Ange, along with JT and Tomas, and we are going to talk about what we think makes for a good player. These are the folks that we look forward to having at our table time and time again. Before we dive into that main topic, though, we're going to ask our Get to Know a Gnome question. Have you ever had a time where you realized you were the problem at the table? JT, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, yeah, and it was fairly recent. You know, as experienced as I am, I still became the problem player without realizing it. The campaign that I'm currently in is a D&D first edition long-running campaign. We've been going a little over a year and a half now. And there's seven players in the Game Master, so the GM gets pretty busy, you know, with his own stuff and resolving each individual player's goods. And I realized that I was stepping on his toes, the GM's toes, by making rulings for him when another player asked me a rules question. People naturally gravitate towards me as a leader type person. I don't know why. It's just part of my characteristics, I guess. And the GM and I are very closely aligned on almost every rule and ruling, so it wasn't a big deal. However, I realized after one particular session that I had done more rulings than the GM had that particular session. And it hit me near the end of the session, and I was like, oh no, I should have been telling everybody to look at the GM, not me. So I immediately apologized. I waited for a break in the flow of the game, and I was like, hey guys, out of game conversation time. I've been doing the GM's job for him without his permission. So we need to look to Bill, who is the game master, for rules clarifications in the future, not me. However, if you're like, where is a rule in the book? I am more than happy to point you to the right book and page. And if the book doesn't clarify things for you, then you need to get Bill's attention to get a ruling or a rules clarification or whatever. So, and Bill, he wasn't upset. Nobody was upset, but I realized I'm stepping on toes and I should not be doing that. So.
That can actually be a pretty valuable resource to have at the table.
Oh, yeah.
If the player does it in a way that is not, again, stepping on the GM's toes.
Right, yeah. And Bill didn't get upset at all, because like I said, we're very closely aligned in how we treat the nebulous, weird-ass rules of AD&D First Edition.
Yeah.
Because we've both been playing the game for forever.
Yeah, it's just First Edition,
there's
it's
gaps.
Not the most solid rule
set as far as things go. No, it is not. No, it's a good third attempt? Second attempt? So, you know, it's good beta version.
Yeah.
There you go. You know, it's been around for a while. So, that was when I was the bad player for not redirecting people asking me questions about rules to the game master.
Yeah.
What about you, Tomas?
For me, I can say for sure that it was the problem player. But what I did understand about myself is that in a recent game that I was playing, there is this friend of mine that he's doing his first campaign for D&D 5e. And I'm playing as a player, a gnome bard. And whereas we are all working for this king figure, and we are all like the soldiers of the king that are tasked with a certain thing. And my character is the odd one out. He's a musician, very much doesn't care about the authority in any case. He's very much looking to power for the people and stuff like that. So he's not in alignment in any way or form with the king. So by the end of the first session, when we started to notice that there were some things about the world that made us think that maybe the king was like hiding some stuff from us, or there are some additional mysteries in the world, I, as my character, started saying, hey, I think the king is hiding stuff from us. The whole place here is starting to look really weird, and there's a lot of difference in power from the different people in the kingdom. So I think that we should take the king down and start doing all this. And all the players started looking at me and saying, we are working with the king. So I immediately understood that I couldn't under any circumstance play that kind of player, that character in that game without making everyone else like have a problem with me. So I slowly but surely started tweaking the demeanor of my character so it made more sense for the group. I couldn't get to attend the session zero, so that may have been part of that. But still, I think that I sort of became a problem player. But at the end of the day, I could change my character enough so that it made sense for them to be there and not be extremely problematic with the rest of the group. How about you, Anne?
In general, I have absolutely no chill when I'm getting frustrated. I have friends who say they can tell by my face that the switch is about to get flipped and I'm about to get upset at somebody. It generally becomes very obvious that I'm getting annoyed or frustrated, and that can make me a bad player. One specific example is from about a decade ago when a friend was running The Sprawl, which is a cyberpunk Powered by the Apocalypse game. And I'm pretty well versed in PBTA. So when he started running, I immediately started getting annoyed because he was running it, quote unquote, wrong. He did not fully understand some of the concepts about how that type of system is supposed to work. And I was not very gentle in trying to correct things. And I realized about halfway through the session, oh, wait, I'm the baddie. You know, I'm the person that's being the problem here. So I basically pulled back, stopped trying to fix the way he was running things and just let him go. And then afterwards, we had a conversation. I apologized for kind of getting a little out of hand in trying to correct him in the middle of running the game. And then I explained why some of the things he was doing were not the way those systems are supposed to be run.
Sure. Well, PBTA is a different beast if you're only used to D&D style games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was used to a couple of different systems, but PBTA is, like, the specific thing that was kind of hitting me wrong was that the GM never rolls the dice.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything is determined by the rolls of the players, and he was rolling dice to determine what was happening with the bad guys. And I'm like, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
Right.
But I'm like, this is not the time to be doing that, because one, that undermines the confidence of the GM trying to give us a good time.
Right.
B, if he wanted to ask questions, he could have, you know, and D, I'm basically derailing the game for everyone else. So it was better to just, this is a friend. This is a group of friends. It's not a con game. So just let it go. And we can talk about how the system is supposed to work later.
Exactly.
Right.
Moving on into our main topic, the majority of advice we give here at Gnome Stew is targeted at game masters. But let's face it, the players at the table make or break the game in so many ways. Talk to any GM who has run for any length of time, and they'll have some horror stories about players that ruins their games. But what do we actually look for in good players? There's no one way to be a good player, so I thought it would be interesting to pull together some gnomes and have a conversation. So first up, what's a quality in a player that makes you immediately think, I hope I play with them again? JT?
All right, for me, it comes down to a relaxed attitude. You know, be fun to be around and play with, go with the flow, take the hooks that are given, be willing to be the hero and take a few reasonable risks with your character, you know, without being the chaos goblin that just runs off and, you know, takes every risk because, well, there's risk out there. So that's kind of me, just kind of go with the flow, be in, you know, be relaxed towards everybody else's attempts of doing things with their characters and all that good stuff. So that's kind of where I'm at.
The thing that usually jumps out at me first is if they have a fun and interesting way of presenting the character to everyone else at the table, but they do it in such a way that it is inclusive of everyone else at the table rather than hogging the spotlight or being the chaos goblin. You know, because it doesn't matter if you're a really great role player, and we'll get into this later, but it doesn't matter if you're a really good role player if you're not doing things that enhance everything else that's happening at the table.
No, I completely agree with what you both were saying there. But for me, at the end of the day, I think of role-playing games as some mixture between a game and a conversation. And just like in any kind of conversation, any kind of place, like at a cafe or a party or whatever the place it is, I think that what helps best is if by the end of it all, you end up with a smile on your face. If that person helps you, like, end that situation, like, smiling, having a good time, then that's what makes me want to play with them again. That can be done in lots of several ways that we are surely going to be covering here in today's episode.
Let's bring up system mastery. How important is that for a good player?
For me, I like the players, a good player, to know the general rules of the game that we're playing about 60%. So they don't have to know every single little bip and bop and, you know, paragraph and all that good stuff. The rest of the group collectively will all know 100%. So if you don't know, ask somebody else, like people always ask me, or ask the GM. When it comes to their character, know the rules and the mechanics around their specific character at least 90%. That way, they're not always asking the game master, what does my feat do again? Or, you know, what does my spell do? And things like that, right? And for the gaps in your knowledge, know where in the books or cheat sheets or reference guides or on the player-facing side of the GM screen where to find the rest of whatever it is you want to do. So that's kind of where I'm at on system mastery.
This is one I'm a little more flexible on. Like, everyone has to start somewhere, and I'm never going to tell somebody you can't play a game because you've never read the book or know the system or anything.
Oh, yeah,
but
agreed.
If we have been playing a campaign for a dozen, half a dozen sessions, and you're still asking the same questions about how your character works, that's when that starts becoming a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, and it, like with con games, if I know this player has played like a bunch of different Savage Worlds games and is still asking what dice do I use? How do I know what to roll?
Right.
It's like, come on, man, you've played this system before. When it becomes apparent the player isn't even trying, that's when that gets frustrating.
Yeah.
For me, I am on a kind of an opposite side to both. I think that you don't need too much knowledge about the game in order to be a good player. However, there's a very big difference about something that someone that people want to play with and a good player. You can be someone that is extremely fun to play with and know nothing of the game and still try to catch on as you are playing while not asking the same question every single session, as I was saying. However, if you want to come in to a new game, a new campaign, whatever it is, and be the good player at the table, then try to go over the rules. You don't have to have the GM be the only one to do that. I'm not telling you to know the entirety of it, but at least try to know your stuff. Or at least skim it, so that you know the base mechanic of the game, and you can ask very few questions, or just interpret how the game works by seeing how other players play.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said before, I'm not expecting anyone to know a game when a campaign starts, or when they sit down at a con game.
Agreed.
But I expect them to at least try and master what's on their character sheet to not, you know, slow things down when the game is going.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, I had a little over 2-year long Pathfinder campaign that I killed. I just killed it dead, shot it in the head, and walked away. Because I had two players every round of combat would ask, what do I roll to hit? You roll a D20, you roll a D20, and you add that number on your character sheet. One always picked up a D12, which visually is similar to D20, but it was same mistake every time. They couldn't get over it. And the other player would pick up a random die out of the pile of their dice and hold it up to me and go, do I roll this one to hit? And I couldn't do it anymore. I just could not. It upset me so badly after over 2 years of doing this that I was like, nope, I'm out. And I finished that session, went home, chilled out for a couple of days, thought about it, you know, am I in the right headspace? Am I correct to kill this? Am I correct to be upset? I decided, yeah, I'm correct to be upset. Yeah. So I sent an email to everybody and I was like, we're done.
Yeah, it's mostly disrespectful. You are putting your time to prepare a whole game and everything like that, and if that other player doesn't care about all the care that everyone else is putting in the game by not even trying to do something, maybe separate your dice in a way that you can fully understand which die is the each of them. It's not that difficult. They weren't caring enough about the game, and you all as people and friends.
Yeah, I've known players like that. That's not fun. So what matters more than system mastery? What is an important aspect that we want to see other than system mastery? Tomas?
For me, definitely it is including everyone else in the story. Whenever you are playing, whenever you are trying to do something, try to think of a clever way in which you can include another player character in your moment. Maybe you want to go over a wall. Why not ask someone, hey, can you lift me up so I can get to the other side? Or try to distract the guard while I go in. Or I'll do this so that you can do this other thing. So that way you are putting the other person in the spotlight as well, as long as they feel comfortable, of course. But they will notice that and they will have a good time and want to do more stuff with you.
One of the key things I think is important is being proactive. The player needs to know how to take the next steps. You know, don't just sit there and wait for the GM to bring the plot to you. Like, figure out what the group needs to do next. That is one of the many of my GM horror stories from conventions involve players that just sit there.
Yeah.
And won't do anything. And I'm just like, I've given you your options. What are you doing? And they're just like, I don't know. Like, get into your character's head. Figure out what you're doing next.
It's hard to engage with a bump on a log.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah, I have a bit more to add to that. Starting from a different position, you as a GM might want, more often than not, to have your players be the ones that talk among each other, to not be as reactive, so that they can take their own decisions, and you react to whatever it is that they are trying to do. So if there's a moment of silence in your game, you as a GM shouldn't be the one to jump in and try to keep stuff going on. The players may be the one to take a decision or do something to keep the game moving. That's what a good player does.
And sometimes, too, that moment of silence, moments of silence make us GMs panic.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But sometimes those moments of silence are all of the players processing what they've just experienced, their characters. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to let that sit for a moment. You know, and then let them come back in with the role playing to figure out where they're going with whatever it was they just experienced. It's very tempting as a GM to be like, oh God, they stopped talking. I need to jump in and move things along. But, you know, both giving them that moment of silence to process and, as Tomas said, let another player jump in and start moving things along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
JT?
So for me, it's very similar to what Tomas said. Willingness to collaborate and cooperate with everybody else. Don't be the lone wolf character or player. And be part of the group as an engaged member, meaning pay attention while other people are doing things. Be willing to wrap other people into your storyline. Hey, I got to go talk to my contact, but I need a bodyguard. Why don't you, the big burly guy, come with me to make sure nobody tries to take me out, right? You know, just incorporate other players and their characters into your stories, into your actions, and the improv, approaches of saying yes and. So if somebody comes up with an idea, you say, yes, I like that idea, and how about we change it this way? Or if it's an idea you don't like, don't just say no. Say, cool idea, but can we do it this other little bit a different way? And that opens the channels of communication and collaboration. Because you're not just saying no, because that just shuts somebody down. Somebody comes up with an idea and somebody else says, nah, that's a stupid idea. The guy that came up with the idea will now maybe come up with more ideas, but won't be willing to say them for fear of being rejected outright.
I think that brings us to our next question. We've talked a little bit about this, but what can a good player do to support the other players? Because when it comes down to it, as JT mentioned when he talked about the lone wolf, when we are running a game, this is an ensemble show. This is an ensemble story. It is not a story about a single protagonist. It's a group story. So how does a good player support everyone else at the table to make that known?
Okay, as for what we were talking about and what you now propose the question, I bring the following thought. We always think of the GM as that one that has to take all the decisions for the entire group, the one that brings the keeps the story moving and all of that. And there's always a thought as well of if a player goes into the GM seat at least one time, they can better understand them and take better decisions. And I completely agree with that. I think that players should try to take more of the GM's burdens in order to be more of a proactive player and help along with the story. Try to find ways to keep the story moving, to make sure that everyone can participate in the table by asking the needed questions so that they can start moving. Maybe you can say, hey, isn't that we just heard maybe connecting in some way to your backstory? And that way you can have that keep going.
One thing I recommend for players to help with the rest of the table is be excited for everyone else's story, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
If you are excited to see how another character's journey is going, progressing as they engage with the plot elements that are important to them, that can be a super powerful, you know, encouragement to them to engage in the story parts they're interested in. But also, like, for you to, like, not feel like you're being left out if the spotlight isn't on you. You know, because we want to share the spotlight, but you don't want to just sit there twiddling your thumbs while everything happens to everyone else and you're just waiting for your turn. You want to be excited for everyone else's story as well.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for you know, my look at this, if you're at a table with a player that's new to a system, a setting, a genre, or just RPGs in general, be kind and guide them through their choices. Do not choose for them, right? Explain what the options are, what the ramifications of each option, and this is best done through like a Q&A process where you ask the new player, what do you want out of your character, or what do you want your character to be good at or be able to do? And then assist them in making choices that support their desires. You can point at certain classes, subclasses, feats, archetypes, backgrounds, whatever your game system has, and say, hey, you want to be a run-and-gun pilot that knows how to use a rifle. Cool. Here's the best three or four options that will, you know, get you close to that. And here's the things you're giving up to get close to that. Run with it.
We kind of brushed up against this in the Get to Know a Gnome question, where we talked about a player knowing the rules as well as the GM. One of the ways those rules adept players can help a GM is just helping the other players at the table. You know, like if you've got a newbie, like it really helps if you've got a mix of newbies and experienced players. Mm-hmm. Sit a newbie next to an experienced player.
Uh-huh.
Who can basically be like, oh no, that's what this ability does. You know, this is how you can use that. Or if you use this ability, this is kind of what you're going to need to roll. This is not running the game for the GM. It's just helping that player
sure.
understand what's on their sheet. So when it gets to their turn, they don't stop everything whole cloth to, you know, ask the GM questions that you could have been answering for them. Again, you got to be careful that you're not stepping on the GM's toes.
Right.
You're not contradicting the GM's rulings, but having that, I call it a rules lawyer for good.
There you go.
You know, it's the person who knows the rules backwards and forwards, but isn't trying to run the game for the GM. They just know everything. They're the encyclopedia, and you can go to them and go, hey, how does this work? I do this all the time in Mutants and Masterminds because I have a few friends who are really good at running it, and I play with them all the time. So I can go, hey, how does this work?
There you go.
You know, and yeah. then I know what it does. So when a GM gets to me, I can go, this is what I want to do. And we can just get to the roles and keep moving with the story.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because during character creation, you know, whether you do it at the end of session zero or a session 0.5, or you actually get rolling, whenever you do it, everybody's making a character and has questions about how does this work? What is this? What does that do? What's optimal? What's better? Or what fits my archetype or whatever? The game master cannot field all those questions at once. Or there's a lot of latency as the players, quote unquote, get in line for their turn to ask a question. And helping each other out around the table, you know, again, not making rulings, but just, you know, suggestions. Hey, you want to know how to use a knife? Well, you might want to take the stab skill. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's super helpful in being a good player.
So I mentioned proactive players earlier. What is the difference between a proactive player and a dominant player?
So a proactive player will pay attention, prepare for their turn around the table, especially during combat, and answer questions with helpfulness and openness in mind. A dominant player will tell the other players how to play their characters and even sometimes get upset when another player makes a quote-unquote suboptimal choice in character build, character advancement, or character actions. They want to control everything, not make suggestions or provide advice.
Yeah, I find, again, proactive players are the ones who basically, they take the steps to keep the story moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the ones that are, you know, where does the group need to go next? What do we need to do? And they don't let things sit idle for too long before at least making a suggestion of where the group can go and what the group can do. The dominant player just tells everybody to do that. The dominant player tends to be a bit more of a spotlight hog. They tend to basically be like, here's what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. Some of them don't intend to be this way, but they can end up stealing ideas from other players because the other player isn't proactive enough to get it out at the table.
Right.
But the dominant player heard it, and so they put it forward, and now it feels like it was a stolen idea. Proactive players remember everyone is there, everyone is involved, but they keep things moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tend to try and be a proactive player in that I will try very hard not to step on the other player's toes, but I will try and keep us moving through whatever the GM is putting in front of us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the same time, try not to be that player that tells another one what they should be doing in their turn, mm-hmm. or stuff like that. I have many players that tell, hey, I'm going to be doing this, so make sure that when your turn comes, you do this and this and that. And you are just interrupting whatever they were planning on doing, and they may not do it anymore because you just offer that and impose that on the other person as a dominant player.
I've seen this before too, and the player usually thinks they're being helpful.
Exactly.
Because A, they have system mastery, and they know what would work best in this scenario. So they just tell that newbie, here's what you need to do. Don't tell other people how to play their characters. You can offer them advice.
If asked.
But, yeah, if asked, you know, or if they look confused, are you looking for options? Or if, like Tomas said, you want to set something up that'll, you know, benefit both characters, say, hey, do you want to team up on this next thing and basically propose it that way rather than just telling them what to do?
Yep.
Especially with new players, because it can be very easy to steamroll a new player.
Yeah, or one of those shy players that don't take initiative and are more reactive to what the rest of the party does.
Yeah.
It's quite easy to act dominantly over those ones if you are have that kind of personality.
Yeah. So, how do good players interact with the story hooks the GM is putting down on the table?
Take the damn bait. Yeah, and also trust the GM not to intentionally or maliciously screw over the players in or out of game. If you're playing with a game master who regularly makes life harder for you and your character just because they feel like it, not because the scenario needs it or the story demands it, it's time for a GM change or a new group.
Yeah.
And really, it's that simple. Take the bait and don't get screwed over.
Yeah, there's a pretty big difference between players who avoid the plot the GM is trying to offer them and GMs who are trying to railroad.
Yes.
I never advocate for just laying down on the tracks and letting the GM railroad right over you. That's no fun. I can't stand a railroad. And I, again, Ange being the problem player with no chill, I will tell the GM that. That actually happened at Origins last month. But the players who refuse to engage with the plot the GM is very obviously trying to put in front of them are a completely different kind of problem. You need to understand, why is your character here and why would your character get involved in this adventure? If there's a problem with the plot hook the GM is putting down and you're just like, my God, I cannot come up with any justification where my character would get involved in this, have a conversation with the GM. Because in general, take the hooks the GM is presenting you.
Yeah.
You know, even decent GMs who are still getting their feet under them will try and tailor the plot hooks to be of interest to the group at the table.
Yeah, especially if you are playing a traditional RPG.
Uh-huh.
Because those kinds of games require the GM to plan out an entire session and have like maybe 1 to 4 hours of preparation in advance. So they are going to set up a good time for you. Be sure of that. They are not trying to screw you over. They are going, hopefully, right? But in most cases, those kinds of GMs will create the perfect way to create the perfect kind of story that you will be able to sidetrack possibly in the future or take some decision that is cool enough for the entire group to have fun with it.
I was once running a one-shot at a convention. It was a pretty linear game. Characters are given a mission, they go to a location, they do some investigation, they follow the clues, they rescue a caravan.
Sure.
Very straightforward. I'm running this con game, and they get to the middle location where they're supposed to do some investigating, and I can't get them to leave. One of the players kept insisting on asking more questions, investigating other stuff, and I kept having to kind of shuffle things to actually give them a satisfying conclusion in this game. The lost caravan that was 10 miles down the road is suddenly across the river, hidden in the town that wasn't actually there in the adventure, for them to get to it and solve it before the end of the four-hour session. When all was said and done, the player that was the problem and refused to take the plot hook and just follow the clues just looked at me and was like, well, this wasn't bad, but it was way too much of a railroad.
Ugh, he wasn't even on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, you didn't even get to the road, man.
Right.
Thankfully, it was early in the morning and he was on the other side of the table. So I did not get convicted of murder or anything like that. In general, take the hook the GM is giving you.
Yeah.
And if it turns out the GM is running in bad faith as either an antagonistic GM or it's a railroad, you can have those conversations later.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is a quality you didn't appreciate until you started GMing?
Well, it's difficult to answer this question because I started GMing. So the first thing that I did was, well, maybe I did play one game that was a bad game and then I started GMing. So I can maybe put something from there. And something that a quality that I started to appreciate when I was a GM is the level of fun it is to create these stories and to be the referee or the one that adjudicates the rules for the players, to have them create an exciting story. I am just here so that I can give you the toys for you to create this world and play around with. So go ahead, play with them, and that kind of experience for me as a GM has always been amazing. And that goes hand in hand with what we have been telling you of go ahead and be a proactive player. Play with the toys that the GM is giving you and you're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
So like Tomas, I was a game master first because I owned the D&D Red basic box set for 2 weeks longer than everybody else in my Cub Scout pack. That meant I was the most experienced player by 2 weeks. So, yeah. So I was roped into being the GM, which was fine. It wasn't that difficult back in the day. Mainly you drew a maze with some rooms and grabbed a random monster, put it in the room, grabbed some random loot, and the players went and killed it. We were 10, all right? You know, it was also fun. That was our flavor of fun. My gaming has evolved in the 43 years since I started role-playing. I guess my answer would be what I appreciate most in my current group of fellow players and game masters, and that is enthusiastic participation. They all want to be there. They
Yes.
all put the time and energy, sometimes between sessions, to make sure they're ready for the game or the moments within the game.
For me, this is a very nebulous quality, and it's probably a little hard to put an actual qualifier on, but it's the players I know I can count on to basically lean into things the way I expect them to. I have certain campaigns I am running where I will not run if a certain player is not there, because the rest of them are, it's not that they're chaos goblins, it's that I cannot be sure that they're going to engage even remotely with what I am putting down in the way I expect. For example, in one game, they were finishing up a mission, and I was giving them some clues that there was something out in the woods that should be of interest to them. And a couple of the players were like, "Oh, that's interesting. Maybe we can check it out sometime." And the player that is who is also a GM was like, "Hey, we don't have anything else to do. Maybe we should go check it out now." Because the GM's putting a plot in front of us. And I'm like, "Oh, thank God."
Yay, somebody reasonable.
And it's not that the other players are bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's just I know I have one rock amongst them
There you go.
that will keep things going in a certain way.
That's awesome.
So, can we brushed against this earlier. Can someone be a really good role player but still be a problem player? I have thoughts on this one.
For me, role-playing games are this wonderfully weird mixed bag of acting and parsing technical manuals and doing math and imagining what is possible when you're usually in an environment where you're literally doing the impossible, or at least by real-world standards. And for me, someone that deeply embraces their character, but that character goes against the grain of the party, the story hooks that the GM has presented, or just acts like a jerk because it's what my character would do. Those are bad players, and that's kind of all I gotta say about that. What my character would do because they are chaotic neutral alignment.
The very first article I ever wrote when writing an article for publishing on a gaming blog was about reluctant characters. A lot of this comes down to players deciding their character doesn't want to be an adventurer, but then not taking the hero's journey step to actually go on the adventure.
Right.
And a lot of those players that I have run into are pretty good actors. You give them a character and they can role play the voice of their character really well. They might give them a fun voice, but they drag everything else down because they're doing what their character would do. If there's one thing that is a dick move, it is to basically say, "Well, that's what my character would do," even if it screws over everyone else at the table. There is a point of metagaming to basically make sure your character will take the journey that is being put in front of them and engage with the other characters. You can't say you're a good role player just because you can do a cool voice and convincingly act as your character if you are not doing things to help the rest of the game.
Agree.
I think that, as you were saying, there is a certain level of meta narrative or meta playing that we have in here. For example, if you are starting out a campaign and you're being put all of you in a tavern so that you can meet each other and have a conflict that starts the whole campaign up, even if you are playing a nobleman that doesn't have anything else to do, and doesn't have any reason to go with these characters, try to find a reason to do so. Don't be that guy that's going to stretch out the first session or the first 5 sessions because you don't want to go with the group, but you're being forced to because the game is going that direction. You create a better character. That's the answer.
The good player, even if they are a fantastic role player, still takes a moment and figures out how does their character fit into this world? Why is their character heeding the call to adventure? That's what the good player does.
Absolutely, yeah.
Have your expectations of what makes a great player changed over the years?
Yes, quite a bit, to be honest. Because when I got started with this, I got started by watching Critical Role and doing all those kinds of things. And there was always that term of the Mercer effect of, no, you have to be the great person doing the voices and to create the perfect narrative and all of that. But no one was paying attention to, hey, there's the players at the Critical Role table that are incredible players as well. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why that that series is so popular. It's not just because of the GM. So with the pass of the years, I started to notice which things are good to have in a player.
Yeah.
And I started to replicate those things whenever I got the chance to play, which isn't very often. But whenever I get the chance to play, I try to be that helpful player that helps the GM get the story moving and to try to do as many of the things that we have said today happen.
Yeah, Matthew Mercer is a fantastic GM. He is amazing to watch, and he does a lot of things that I'm like, ooh, I want to emulate that. But Critical Role is a success because he has fantastic players that make it easy for him to be a good GM like that.
Yes.
You know, it's pretty self-evident if you watch any of them. Yes, they're all professional voice actors, but there is still a lot that they do that enhances everything else at the table for everyone there.
So expectations, I don't think they've changed a lot. I'm sure they have, because I've been playing what, 43 years. I'm sure, I mean, I've changed, since being 10. But as I've matured more, and now that I'm older, I'm closer to the end of my life than the start of my life, right? And just well aware of that. This means I've come to realize that I don't have the time, energy, or desire to put up with rude, garbage, or jerk-like behavior. I just don't have time for that anymore. So I cut it out of my life entirely, role-playing or otherwise, so that I can more enjoy what time I have left in this world. So my expectations, I don't think, have changed, but my tolerance for poor behavior has certainly changed in the last probably 10 years.
I think for me, I you know, originally back when I started in the 80s, being able to do a voice and do that high-end role-playing, you know, was like, oh, that's the ultimate. That's where you want to go as a player. And I've come to realize that that just doesn't make you a good player, especially when I've seen so many of them that aren't good at playing with others at the table.
Sure.
You know, it's like,
it's a good actor, not a good player.
Yeah, it's a good actor. It's not a good player. And so I have changed my perspective on that. I've met some amazing players who can't do voices. They can't do an accent or anything like that. And that's fine. That's fine. It's like if they're playing their character and they're getting into the story and they're excited about everyone else's story at the table, that's a player I want there, you know? Wrapping things up. If you could give players one piece of advice, what would it be?
Okay, tying back to the very beginning, I am going to say that the one advice I tell you is be that player that has everyone else at the table, leave the table with a smile on their face.
Yeah.
Be kind to others and yourself. There's always grace that you have to provide yourself when you make a mistake, make an oops, whatever. Mm-hmm. However, being kind to others does not equate to being a doormat. Others, you know, you don't want to be walked all over. There's a huge difference between kindness and weakness.
Very important.
And many people view being kind to another person as a sign of weakness. It's not. It's actually being intentionally vulnerable to another person, which is a sign of strength, character, not weakness. So just be kind to others, and don't forget to be kind to yourself. If you've oops done something in or out of role playing, just give yourself some grace and correct it.
I think the one thing I would add to that is be observant, pay attention. See, like, again, I go back to the be excited about everyone else's story. Pay attention. Who hasn't been involved in a little while? Figure out how your character can pull them in. Pay attention to what the GM is putting down and if somebody's missed a clue or an interesting NPC that nobody is engaged with. Engage with them. Pay attention to when things are starting to lag a little bit and see if you can get something started, you know, and out of game, talk to the GM, talk to the other players, talk about the game. You know, it is okay to engage about the game at an above table level. You know, it's talk about how to make things better. You know, the more interested you are in, you know, being better at the table for everyone involved, the more excited everyone else is going to be to have you there.
One additional thing that I wanted to add, because mine was a bit shorter, I just came up with the idea that, as I said before, you as a player need to be helpful to the GM and take a bit of that GM role as well. And that is also with what you see in Session Zeroes, for example, with the safety tools and stuff like that. If there are lines and veils, if there is an S card on the table, make sure that you understand the things that you can play around with and which you don't and shouldn't.
Yeah.
So that you take care of the rest of your group. And that can be done in a better way if you're following all the safety tools that you prepared for the Session Zero.
Yeah, and I mean, talk to the GM. Maybe they want somebody to be a note taker. Maybe they want somebody to be the scheduler. You know, maybe they want somebody to bring snacks. You know, it's like,
yeah,
figure out what the group needs and how you can help add to that. So getting us out of here, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can Patreon back up and follow the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network. So if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
That is Pandas Talking Games. Charming longtime gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Showing Pandas, Phil, and Senda every other Wednesday, answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. It's like Car Talk, but for your games.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with various social media places that are active or semi-active or not active at all. We're out there. Gnomes, is there anything else you want to give a shout-out to today?
Rise of the Lazy Game Master by Mike Shea, also known as Slight Flourish, is on Kickstarter right now. If you listen to this episode the day it drops, you'll have about 22 days to get in on the action. This is Slight Flourish's third GM advice book, not its third book, but its third specific GM advice book, and the link to the Kickstarter will be in the show notes. I'm also going to include links to where you can get his other books online as well.
They do good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Tomas?
As for me, I have been running an itch funding since the start of the year that is for Crypt of the Necrolich. If you're looking for a great variety of terrifying adversaries with cool innovative mechanics and designed to have synergies with adversaries from the same tier, then consider checking out the Villain Frame, an all-new innovative take on campaign frames, Crypt of the Necrolich, for Daggerheart, of course. Created by yours truly.
From me, one of my favorite Powered by the Apocalypse games has been Masks, which came out way back in 2016. Magpie Games has recently announced they are launching a new edition of the game. Currently, as of us recording this, the Kickstarter is coming, and I am not sure when it's going to launch. But if you are interested in superheroes and coming-of-age stories, you're going to want to keep an eye on this one, because it was probably one of the best Powered by the Apocalypse games to come out. It's Masks, A New Generation, second edition. So, do you think we were good enough players to avoid being thrown in the stew?
Well, I didn't make the rules for you, so I didn't mess that up this time, so maybe.